let's talk about DNA again for one moment. We have that, we have a phosphate end, and then we have a pentose sugar. This DNA molecule is like a ladder. So there are two sides. The sides are made up of pentose sugar and a phosphate group. The rungs of the ladder are made up of A, T, C, or G. So make sure that you remember what the actual composition is. That will be important. Remember what those rungs, what the size of the ladder are, what the rungs of the ladder are. So we figured out Chargaff's rule. We figured out how to find a codon. And we kind of got sidetracked pretty hard with cancer. So we ended at these neutral and point mutations last time. That point mutation changes things, neutral mutation, no change. What does it talk about? The codon. Okay, it changes what codon. Okay, so it changes which amino acid it's going to pick up. DNA to RNA to protein. So we've got to take this DNA information from inside the nucleus of the cell, and we've got to get it outside and build something with a protein. So we start off with the DNA. We transcribe DNA to RNA. We rewrite it. We transcribe it. We rewrite it from DNA to RNA. Think about somebody changing language from one to another, an interpreter. Reading something and then writing down in another book, in another language, whatever it is.
Greek to Latin.
Greek to Latin, sure. How about Latin to English? Because that's what we're doing a lot in this class. We've got our initial blueprint in Latin, and then we rewrite it in English. So now we have an English blueprint for our workers out here in the cell to read. So we've transcribed it from one blueprint to a new blueprint that we don't mind if people tear up and destroy. Right? We've got that hard copy, that one that we want to file away, the one we want to keep, the one we never want damaged, and now we have a second copy of it, one we don't really care about. So we transcribe it inside the nucleus. We never ever want the DNA getting out of the nucleus unless we're in absolute control. We're going through mitosis. Then we send the RNA outside the cell. The RNA is sent outside into the cell, outside of the nucleus. We're going to then translate it. We're going to read it again, and we're going to make sense of it. It's going to be translated on this ribosome. So this ribosome is actually a big segment of RNA that matches up the codon with the amino acid. And it puts amino acid 1, side 2, side 3, side 4, side 5, and then it lets them twist and shape and turn into a big protein. So that ribosome keeps reading off that RNA and putting a new amino acid on for every 3. A new amino acid on every 3. Each codon. So translation is taking place at the ribosome. These are important. The actual work is being done at the ribosome. That's where the translation happens, where it goes from a piece of paper to something. So if you're building a building, that translation from the blueprint to a building happens with the workers. It happens there. The ribosome is our worker. Those are the guys actually building the building. So we've got different roles for RNA. We've got messenger RNA. This is a copy of the DNA. It's transcribed and travels outside the nucleus to the ribosome. We've got ribosomal RNA, so rRNA. This is translation. This is the ribosome. Takes out the appropriate amino acid. tRNA is a different type of RNA. This transfer RNA grabs particular amino acids based on its label. So it's going to grab an amino acid, and it's going to match with the codon in the RNA. So you have another one that goes out and finds the amino acid and then floats over to the ribosome, and that's how it kind of fits together. They all fit together, and that's how they start making this chain. That's a bit more complex, so I just want you to know that translation happens at the rRNA, the ribosomal RNA. Most of the time we talk about the DNA being the only major storage of genetic information. But in some viruses, they only use RNA to store. They send that RNA back out, back into another organism, reread, and the cycle goes on. When they reconstruct the virus inside the cell, when they read it off of that ribosome,
they create another section of the RNA, and they stick in a new virus body. So, transcription from DNA to RNA. Transcription is going to take place in the nucleus. We talk about scribes. Okay, you write something down exactly, word for word.
One letter for one letter.
RNA is just like DNA, except it has uracil instead of the T. So every time it would be A to T, it's A to U instead. That's important to know.
If I present something to you with U's in it on an exam, what would it obviously be? RNA.
If it has only T's in it, what would it be?
DNA.
So what we're really also doing, what we're doing is we're actually unbuckling, we're opening up these bonds. We open up this hydrogen bond between the two, okay, whether it's A to T or C to G. We open that bond up, and that's what we're actually writing. We're matching a strand of RNA in there. We're matching it up one to one. So what we're going to do is we're going to change from nucleic to amino acid. So we're going to try and take the next step. We transcribe it from DNA to RNA, then we have to translate it, and that ribosome. We're going to make this big protein. So, we read this three nucleotides at a time, right? That's a codon, it's got a code on it. Codon. Three nucleotides, a codon. Each codon codes for a specific amino acid. Let's go back and think about Chargoff again. He must have liked Star Wars, right? He must have loved Star Wars, because we've got A to T, or U, and C to G. When we transcribe this one, what are we going to have under the G?
U.
U, because we're with RNA. The thing that's very important to realize is all organisms are using this same DNA code.
We take advantage of that constantly.
Bacteria can read our genes and produce proteins we need. This is what we use to make insulin now.
We have a whole bunch of bacteria that we've slammed that human DNA strand into and said, okay, you're going to make us
insulin.
Just make it. Just keep making it. And they do. And we can harvest large volumes of insulin from these little bacteria.
So now we have to worry about it a whole lot less. But in the past, we used to harvest
insulin from pigs, because they actually have a fairly similar code to us, and a fairly similar setup, or corpses. So you were either getting human insulin or porcine insulin. It's been a while since this has happened. We figured out the bacteria thing. This is one of the first big moves we made with genetics,
because we weren't really getting enough insulin. It was pretty rare and pretty problematic. The wonderful thing about pigs, they are so similar to us, we can use them very often in transplants, xenotransplantation.
Xeno means other.
So other species transplantation. First thing we're going to talk about in this are stem cells.
People see stem cells, the statement of stem cells, as one of those boogeyman statements, one of those hot topics.
Stem cells are not bad things. Stem cells are very good things. Stem cells are undifferentiated cells. What in the world does that mean? Undifferentiated means not different, right? Undifferentiated, not yet different. That means these cells are that genuine, unique, specific, number one zygote style cell. They have not changed into anything else yet, if they're embryonic stem cells. So there are two main things to pay attention to, adult stem cells and embryonic. Adult stem cells, while still being stem cells, are already down a path. They're already down a path. We start off with this little zygote, egg plus sperm, little zygote. We go into multiple different cells. Well, this week in lab, we talk about some of those different tissues that we're going to eventually become. We go down different paths to reach these end tissues. We go down different paths, we change into different types of cells to become these end tissues. We divide and divide and divide, and we become this big ball of cells. Remember, we saw those big blastocells, right? Full of cells, the fish eggs. Well, we differentiate until we become one of these cells. Adult stem cells are already on the path. embryonic are not, or very shortly, very barely down the path. That makes embryonic stem cells very, very useful. We see all things like science fiction shows, right? Where people regrow tissue. They just regrow something and reattach it. Why does that work? Why can't we just do that? Why can't we do that with someone else's tissue? Your body will reject it. This is why transplants, we have to have anti-rejection pills. What do those anti-rejection pills really do? Turn off your immune system. They turn off your immune system so you won't attack and kill whatever organ was transplanted to you. They're not going to transplant limbs because we can't get the nerves right. Yeah. Any organ that we change out, we have to make sure you don't just reject it and destroy it. Why do we have to worry about that? Because if it was important enough for us to surgically change out what one you had, you must really, really need it. We don't do heart transplants because we feel like it. We do them because they're necessary. So we have to make sure you don't reject them. What material are you guaranteed not to reject? Your own, right? That's the goal with stem cells. Finding ways to harvest these cells, tell them what path to go down, and grow you a new blank. Grow you a new heart. Grow you a new liver. Grow you a new arm. And we're starting to get that.
Yeah, actually. Although it's mostly just kind of epithelial structure, a little bit of, anyway. If you watch 60 Minutes, you've seen that people are starting to, that this path is starting to go, finally. It probably should have happened about 8 years ago, but oh well. A lot of people had problems with the statement of embryonic stem cells, because how are we going to get embryonic stem cells? Embryos. Most times, or at least in the initial research, the easiest way to get these cells were from aborted fetuses. So, did the scientists go out and ask people to abort their fetus so they could get stem cells? No. Was it approached that way?
Certainly.
These were abortions that either naturally happened or were chosen by the person doing it. That's not our place. We asked to research on those cells to try and help people, make something good out of it.
But we have to find these cells. We have to be able to get to these stem cells. So how are we going to do that? Well, right now, one of our main goals are umbilical stem cells. Stem cells from the umbilical blood. So cells that have just kind of plopped off. Now, are they as far? They're not necessarily as far down this path as we would like. Okay? They're not as far back. But they're a whole lot better than the adult stem cells. These adult stem cells, they're already most of the way down. They can only differentiate into a few things. Our bodies naturally use these stem cells to rebuild damage that's done to us. Can we rebuild dead nerve tissue? Not very well. But we can rebuild a few cells. A few. And by a few, I mean out of 6 billion, 5 or 6. Not many. These, the neural stem cells, very rare. Very rare, very hard to find. They have to be in the right place for you to get anything back from. So that's tough. That's one of the main things we want to go after. With these stem cells, we want to help work on Alzheimer's.
Okay, Alzheimer's. There we go. That was the correct pronunciation.
We want to work on brain damage. We want to fix these things that you can't just replace. You can't just replace somebody's brain.
Oh, there have been a lot of trials. Is it one of the first trials for spinal? Okay.
A lot of that's going to be guiding those long tubes, the axons that we'll talk about later,
guiding those to heal properly. Because that's one of the big problems when you have spinal damage. It's you're not actually killing any of the cells. You cut them and then they don't seal right. They shift over. They try and find the other ones and they tie the wrong way. So instead of going straight back to each other, they go like this and they don't work. So finding a way to make them go back to each other, it seems like stem cells will probably work and guide them the right way, which is pretty amazing, to fix themselves.
The great thing about these embryonic stem cells, we can turn them into whatever we need. They're jack-of-all-trades. We can get those things that we just can't get otherwise. The adult stem cells, everybody here has been looking through microscopes at cells, right? We've all been looking in lab. Boy, it's not easy, right? Imagine trying to find the one cell that's dividing out of all those cells on those slides. Try it out of all those cells on those slides when you can't actually cut the thing up.
Because you can't cut up the person you're trying to save, right?
So, these adult stem cells, really hard to get. Really hard to use.
I mean, we're working on that too.
But that's why there's such a drive for this embryonic stem cell research. And because it had one negative term connected to it, we had a bit of a delay on it. But the real goal is that whole sci-fi, grow you a new body, whatever, part, whatever body part you need. Fix your brain if you incur brain damage. It's pretty amazing. The further along in development, the less of these base stem cells you have, and the more they're down the path. Absolutely. The longer you're developing, longer we're developing, the more these are differentiated. That's our initial setup. That's our starting point. Now we need to talk about what those stem cells are doing. They're dividing through mitosis. We're cutting with binary fission. Okay, that's mitosis and cytokinesis. We double our nucleus, and then we make two whole new cells. Important side note, cells can be mitotic without using cytokinesis. Cells can use cytokinesis without being mitotic. Depends on what they're making and what they're doing. For our class, we're going to see them running together, running in tandem, always. We're always going to see them working together. But there are situations where they don't, depending on what we need. Whether or not we want to give that cell a nucleus, so on and so forth. Whether that cell needs more nuclei. We'll see that in muscle cells. Got a few important terms. We've got homologous, which means they're roughly the same, they're pretty much the same. Think of this as the homologous chromosome, homologs. You get one chromosome, or one chromosome one from your mother, one chromosome one from your dad. You have a homologous pair, pretty much the same. They're homologs. So they're same, basically the same. Same chromosome. They're not going to contain the exact same information, but they're pretty much the same chromosome. Like I said, 1, 2, 3, 4, so on and so forth. Up to the 23rd pair, right? X and Y, not the same. Sister chromatids, that's a doubled chromosome. When I draw X's, I'm drawing a sister chromatid. What that means, it's a doubled chromosome. It has twice the information on it. Because we've got to take these 23 pairs, under our 10, 23, and double them to give 23 pairs to each cell. We've got to double all 46 chromosomes in order to have 46 in cell A and 46 in cell B. When we double the cell, they want to have every bit of information in each. They want to have it all. So we've got to double that up, so these sister chromatids are going to be important. They're what we're going to pull apart and send half to one side and half to the other. Centromere is the center part that holds those two together. The centrosomes are structures that form the centers of the soon-to-be divided cells. So centrosome, centromere is in between the sister chromatid. Centrosome, centromere. Microtubules or spindle fibers, those are the lines I'm going to draw. They're what will connect these chromatids and pull them apart.
We've got to have something holding, connecting to these to pull them apart. Otherwise, they're not going to come apart. They're just going to stay together.
We've got all these important terms down. Now we're going to talk about interphase. Interphase, we're going to have a G1, an S phase, and a G2. G1 is a growth phase. This happens immediately after cytokinesis. This is its first little life phase. It's a happy little cell. It's living. It's little. It's growing. Then it goes to S phase. During S phase, the DNA duplicates. The DNA itself duplicates. That happens in the S phase. Then we have the G2 phase. This is the growth, a second growth phase. It's actually where the cell kind of goes through some checkpoints. Check, check.
The cell makes sure that it has all the DNA properly replicated at this point.
So, G1 phase is checking to make sure that the initial DNA is proper. G2 phase is checking to make sure that the duplicated DNA is proper.
If both of those are good to go,
then we're ready to start cutting this cell up.
If it's not, the cell kills itself. The cell will kill itself. It will destroy itself. Most times.
So the first thing we see is prophase. This is mitosis. We looked at this a bit in lab RNA. We see prophase. During prophase, we condense the chromatin into chromosomes and the nuclear envelope breaks down. This guy starts to reach in to grab there. This one starts to reach in to grab there. Nuclear envelope breaks down. But that just spins the fibers. Metaphase, we line up in the middle. Anaphase is the action phase. We pull it apart. So we're going to separate these sister chromatin. We're going to split these in two. We're going to rip them in two so that we have this genetic information equally distributed across both. Equally distributed across both. Pairs, 23 pairs per side. Okay? So in prophase, there are 46 pairs, which means there are 92 individual chromosomes, 46 pairs. We then line those 46 pairs up in the middle, so there are still 46 pairs. Then we pull them apart in anaphase, so we have 23 pairs a side now. Telophase, again, 23 pairs per side. This is where we are bringing back the nuclear membrane, reforming that nuclear membrane. Cytokinesis generally takes place during this step. This is the cutting of the cell. Cytokinesis is the actual movement, the cutting of the cell. So is cytokinesis part of mitosis? So if I ask you that on the exam, you would know cytokinesis is not part of mitosis.
Interphase
is not. Interphase is the normal life. So mitosis is going to be just from here to there. Mitosis is only talking about the nucleus, doubling the nucleus. Doubling of the nucleus is mitosis. Cytokinesis is how the cell divides. Okay, so first, the cell has to double all of its organelles.
Why? Well, if I'm going to become two cells, I need all of this in both of them. So you've got to double what you've got before you cut it in half.
Next, it forms this neat little protein ring around the plasma membrane, and it starts shrinking it. Starts shrinking it, notching it, notching it, notching it, notching it, until eventually, clip, and it clips those two cells apart. So this protein ring tightens around it.
Blah, we've got two cells.
That's what we need to know for the general generic mitosis cytokinesis. Next, we want to talk about meiosis. What else do we really need to do? I mean, we've got cells, and we've got a way of dividing cells. What else do we have to do here?
Destroy cells.
We've got lysosomes. They can open those up and kill themselves. What else do we need to do as an organism? What's one of the main tenets of life?
Reproduce.
So, what do we have to make now?
With gametes. There we go.
Gametes. Can we use mitosis to make gametes? No. Mitosis makes two totally functional cells. Mitosis leads to two fully functional cells. So let's add that up here. In gametes, with 46 chromosomes, okay, 23 pairs of chromosomes, with gametes, do we want to give them 46 chromosomes? Do we want to have 46 chromosomes from our dad and 46 chromosomes from our mom? No way. That's way too much. Too much information. Why would that be a problem? Because each and every time species bred, they would double the size of their nucleus. They would need to double the size of their nucleus to house all the information in within.
So every time that sexual reproduction would take place, the next organism would have to be almost twice the size of the previous. Again and again and again, because you're doubling the size of that nucleus. That's because it's a much larger cell, and it's the same idea as what we looked at today for cancer. When it has a lot of energy, all it does is it copies its nucleus and cuts in half. It's really quickly. When you have tons of energy, you just cut in half. That's really what's going on.
It gets that ball rolling much more quickly. Otherwise, it would take a lot longer to develop. But that's a little bit aside. So, we need a new process to form these yetis. We need a couple of important pieces of information. Number one, we want 23 chromosomes in each. That's going to be a haploid cell. Think of hap meaning half. Half chromosomes, haploid, okay? It's a haploid cell. It's a half full cell. Half. All right, sounds pretty close. Haploid, half full. Okay? Diploid, di means two, right? So diploid means you've got pairs of chromosomes. Diploid means pair. So this has both sets of chromosomes. A normal body cell or a fertilized egg, a zygote. So we need to be able to refer to this haploid and diploid. Mitosis is going to have two fully functional diploid cells at the end. Meiosis, and I'm going to do it overall because I'll have to. It's going to have four haploid cells at the end of meiosis two. It's actually going to have two haploid cells at the end of meiosis one. We have the same thing happening, only it happens a little differently. Interphase happens normally.
What happens during interphase in the S phase? We double the chromosome. Wait a minute. So now we've got 46 pairs. We've got 92 chromosomes, and we want to end with 23. We got a lot of work to do. All right, we've got to chop this up. What we do is we actually go through chopping it up twice. We chop it up twice. That's why we end with four cells, because interphase still happens normally. So my goal was to do that. Interphase can lead to either meiosis or mitosis, depending on the cell type. It can go either way. Okay? Go either direction. We have prophase one. This is really similar to the normal prophase. Break down the nuclear membrane. Spindle. They're reaching in. Now, I'm going to put two separate pairs of sister chromatid in here. I'm going to put blue is dad, red is mom. Okay, so got big red, little red, little blue, big blue. Those colors are going to be important for us to track things as they happen. I've already pretty much generated this in metaphase. So in metaphase one, we've got little one, big one, little one, big one. Line up in the center, just the same. So here's where it changes. Okay, in this metaphase one, we're going to pull these apart. But wait, we actually want to line them up a bit differently. Instead of big and little, line up with big and little. These homologous chromosomes line up in the middle, but they line up next to each other. Now, we're actually going to pull the entire group apart. So, we've got the whole thing, and we pull one big one up, and one little one up, and one big one down, and one little one down. We're pulling them to these two separate sides. Anaphase, so we cut in half again, telophase and cyto, okay, boom, boom. Now, here's that really weird different thing.
We have a big X, a little X, big X, a little X. Do we have the pairs together? No. So at the end of meiosis one, we have two haploid cells. Meiosis two is where we actually pull these two apart. So in prophase two, which doesn't really happen because we don't really fully reform, but I just kind of write it on there so people don't get confused. We have to have two whole cells here, two entire cells. Because we've got one big blue lining up in the center, one little blue lining up in the center, one big red lining up in the center, one little red lining up in the center. We go to anaphase two, and all of a sudden we pulled these apart. Okay, we pulled these apart. We're going to end up reforming the same main telophase two. We're going to end up, I'm just going to draw them all, with four cells with their own nuclei, and they're all going to be what? Haploid. How many cells did we start out with meiosis? We started at one. We went through meiosis one, and we had two haploid cells at the end of that. Then we went through meiosis two, and ended with four haploid cells after that. We then mature these into gametes. Whether that's an egg or a sperm depends on the sex. That's so that you can see these as homologs. So you see there's a big red and a big blue. They line up. One is from your father, one is from your mother. So that gamete is going to pull the sister chromatid from your dad, and meiosis one, both of them from your dad up one, both of them from your mom down to another. The next one in meiosis two, we're going to pull those two from your dad apart. That's why it's important to know. Up here, we're always pulling both of them apart, so it doesn't matter. But down here, it makes a big difference. A big difference. Just so that you can see how your genes can intermix. Genes that you get from your mother, the genes you get from your father, randomly disperse by how they line up in that metaphase. And it's never the same twice. It is, but it's rare, right? It's 1 in 23 that it's the same one plus.